I'm Scott Hansen, host of NFL Red Zone. Lowe's knows Sundays hit different when you earn them. We've got you covered with outdoor power equipment from Kobalt and everything you need to weatherproof your deck with Trex decking. Plus, with lawn care from Scotts and, of course, Pit Boss grills and accessories, you can get a home field advantage all season long. So get to Lowe's, get it done, and earn your Sunday. Lowe's, official partner of the NFL.
Not many drivers have made their Formula One debut in a Formula Two car. Then again, not many drivers have left Ferrari and then returned there. But Jackie Ickx is unique.
I'm not joking when I tell you I wanted to be a gardener or a gamekeeper. I never did what I want.
Remarkable then that Jackie became Belgium's most successful F1 driver and one of the most versatile racers in motorsport history. As well as winning 8 Formula One races, Jackie won Le Mans 6 times, the World Endurance Championship twice, and even the Paris-Dakar Rally in the African desert. But it's not the success that Jackie remembers the most. It's how racing changed him as a person.
It's a miracle to be alive when I think about all I've done. It's not a matter of talent. It's only a matter of luck. My vision on the world and the people changed completely because instead of being focused on winning, I have a vision on other people living other type of life. You become a better person.
Here on F1 Beyond the Grid, with me, Tom Clarkson, Jackie takes me back to the 1966 German Grand Prix, where his Formula One career began in a rather bizarre fashion by today's standards. Back then, F2 cars were allowed to race alongside F1 cars at the Nürburgring Nordschleife because it was such a long track. 3 times longer than Spa, the longest circuit on today's F1 calendar. Jackie tells me how his debut there led to him joining Ferrari in 1968 and why he left the team after just one season, only to return a year later. I also ask him how it felt finishing runner-up in 1970 to Jochen Rindt, the only driver to have been crowned world champion posthumously, after he died at Monza with 4 races of the season still to run. And on the subject of safety, Jackie remembers his one-man protest on track that changed Le Mans forever. Jackie, it's lovely to have you on the show again. How are you?
Well, I'm very proud to have Tom interviewing me, I must admit. But we share the same passion, isn't it?
We certainly do. Look, do you keep across Formula One these days?
Time to time, but I'm still close, yes, to it, of course, because when you have belonged to the group for quite a long time and being reasonably successful, you understand that alone you're nobody. And clearly, in my philosophy, 90% of the job is done by people who have the same passion, but they work in the shade, in the way, in the shadow. We pick up the glory. They get the nice feeling of having done the job, but they deserve much more, as well as the spectators and the fans, because without them, you have nothing.
Jackie, when you look at the current grid and what they've achieved so far this season in 2025, who has impressed you?
A group of people. The new generation, it's a major change in Formula One. Yes, you have, of course, Oscar, Lando, I can include still Max in a way, Adjar, Lawson.
All the 6 rookies.
Yes, I think, honestly, the level, it's younger than before, and I trust strongly in young people today.
Which of those people, which of those drivers reminds you of you?
We are in total different world. Formula One has 75 years of age now, but clearly in the 60s, the time of Jackie Stewart, Fangio, because you have to mention Fangio, all these people, it's not the same world at all. I have no nostalgia for yesterday. I have the nostalgia of the people I met who made the story possible for all of us. Bernie Ecclestone, for example, who changed the world of the Formula One into a profession, a total professionalism. But modern drivers need so many talent, and you have the best of the world, because you don't fight for tenths of second anymore, you fight for milliseconds. And you have to understand that you have a car who follow the rules of the FIA, but made by different people in different ways to get the same result. On the other side, you have drivers who genetically are different, and at the end, you mix the two, and on the grid, you have only milliseconds between them.
I'm quite fascinated by this. So do you think Max Verstappen, let's use him as the example, would have been quick in your day? Equally, if you were racing now, do you think you would have been able to get the maximum out of these?
Of course, Max. Nobody can tell he has a better car than the others, but he's still there. He's growing in a way. He has more recognition today than he had yesterday, because when you win nonstop, they say, okay, he has the best car. No, he doesn't have the best car, but he's still there. Of course, the McLaren are the cars to beat, but I have a lot of admiration for the talent of these, because you have to be so good and so precise and so professional. My time, you can't qualify it as amateur time. We raced every weekend in different categories. In the early days, we had no sponsors, only technical sponsors. So it was just like Fangio, a pure sport in a way. Today, to reach the level where they all are, you have to follow the steps, Formula 3, as in the past. But you have to be winners all the time. You need to be in communication very good. And then you have to be able to drive 100% in controlling on the steering between 12 and 18 little switch, and you're able to talk to your team as well into it. Very impressive.
If we think of drivers as athletes, and athletes have got better over the last 60 years, look at the 100 meters, the time has got faster. Do you think racing drivers have got better as well?
Much better. No, it's done scientifically, and you have you know where you go. But in my time, we were pure amateurs, not exercising much, not running much, not cycling much, going to bed late.
Enjoying yourself.
Yes, life. But today, you have an athlete, and it's very demanding. I lived that in Goodwood last week, to go out of a Brabham from 69. It's not easy. And remember, you have only a rev counter, water temperature, oil temperature, and oil pressure. That's all you have to check during the... Today, it's not the case. Have you seen the panel in front of you, with the plus, the minus, and...
Well, Jackie, we're sat in the Ferrari motorhome. We've got pictures from yesteryear all around us. It's wonderful. And given the success you had with this team in Formula One and in sports cars, does it feel like a second home, even now?
It's interesting to see Lewis, for example, that I've met once briefly a long time ago, who wanted to join Ferrari. Yes, those who have driven for Ferrari are a specific community. And clearly, your heart stay red for all your... And that's the reason why you are here, because I spent 5 years with Ferrari a long time ago. But yes, Ferrari remains very, very special. And I speak about Lewis because he's two-time good in my point of view. He's two-time good because he's the record holder of everything. He has nothing to prove. And everybody wants to have him, and him too, to have the hope to win one time. But he's two-time good at the same time. He's not only the great Lewis and unique Lewis Hamilton, as a person, as a human person, with the foundation, 44 Foundation, he's the first one who involves himself into that direction. Black Lives Matter. He had no fear to do it. So... to me, the second side of Lewis Hamilton is maybe, because he's unbeatable, that one is the first, because nobody did anything like he did.
That's he's a trailblazer, isn't he?
Yes.
In and out of the car.
Yes.
And the lure of Ferrari was irresistible for him,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, probably, because I never interviewed him, but you did, maybe. But clearly, winning or not winning is not the most important. He enjoys motor racing. He still have the desire to do well. He's still doing well in reality because, yes, it's plenty of young kids in F1, but yes, he performs well. The only difficulty he has to face the erosion of the time and the year passing. That's probably the big challenge for him. But when you think he starts at 6 and finish at 40, and still being on the grid and still being present on the first half, depending from the races, it's just fantastic.
Now, you raced for British teams, German teams, French teams.
Italian team.
Italian second. What makes this Italian team different to all the others?
Because the story of Ferrari is just an incredible story. Because passion yesterday exists too about motor racing. And Enzo Ferrari, it's an open door to say that it's known everywhere in the world today with as McDonald's or Coca-Cola or whatever. He is there because the man has an incredible story. He raced himself. He decided to make racing cars because he thought it was probably a better idea to let the other drive and to build things. And he built Ferrari racing car and manufacturer behind it. And having lived with him, I'm probably the only one where I don't put any but when I talk about him. The reality was, in my opinion, something very sensitive, amazingly, for a lot of people. He lived very cruel moments in motor racing in the 50s with a number of drivers, because I don't have to explain you that in those days, to risk things in motor racing, it's a free choice. It's a human right in a way. You have to do what you like, and everybody did what he liked, but it was a cruel sport as well. The reason he didn't show up on race course, I think, is because having lived the disappearance for people who were driving for him, where he had a close relation with, was very cruel. That's why he didn't show up, except at Monza, the week before the Grand Prix, because in those days you could test at Monza the day before. But I understood later on that the reason he was keeping a certain distance between the driver he had at the time was simply because he lived the cruelty of losing friends before.
Because I was going to say, was he a friend to you, or would he not let you that close?
I can tell you he liked me very much, and he was very patient and really liked me very much.
What was he like to deal with then?
It was clear, because the goal is to win. But I never suffer of feeling that I didn't have the best material, or my teammate had a better car than me, or having a worse engine than he. The goal for him was winning. And very basic, but it's the same for a driver. It's not the speed you go through certain corners, even if you are able to do at Spa on top of the radio 300 kilometers per hour, which is just extraordinary. The goal is very simple, is to be one of the best and, if possible, to win.
What were the negotiations like with him when you were discussing money?
For example, there were no money at the time.
But Jackie, you were being paid by Ferrari.
Yes, but that was not a problem, a commercial deal. Can you imagine that in my time I could drive for Ford Motor Company and drive for Ferrari? It's just to tell you,
wouldn't
life
happen today.
Was different. This is not possible today. Can you imagine that I was doing saloon car racing and driving, I drove all sort of cars, all sort of motorcycle in the early days. There were no sponsors. the money was not a point for none of us. Yes, there were a little money, but can you imagine when I drove Formula 3 for Cantirell, for example, my starting money was £50, or my starting money for F2 was £100, even if the pound at the time was probably three times higher than today. Things were easy.
This episode is sponsored by Indeed. You know that feeling when you realize you needed to hire someone yesterday. The pressure's on and you need to move quickly. That's where Indeed can help. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other sites. Just use Indeed's sponsored jobs to stand out and hire fast. Your post will jump right to the top for the most relevant candidates, so you connect with the best people for the job from the start. In fact, Indeed data shows that sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed receive 45% more applications than non-sponsored ones. And what I love about Indeed is exactly what I love about our sport. It's streamlined, efficient, and built to deliver under pressure. No lengthy subscriptions, no locked-in contracts. You only pay for results. And when I say it's fast, I mean it. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/grid. Just go to Indeed.com/grid right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/grid. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed is all you need. This episode is sponsored by Liquid IV. And right now, you can try their Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier and get 20% off your first order at liquidiv.com with the code GRID. As we wind down for the summer break in F1, many of you might be taking a little time off too, and staying hydrated is key to feeling your best throughout these long, hot days, especially if you're juggling travel, long days out, or just trying to make the most of the late sunshine. Just one stick of Liquid IV mixed into 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone, and it's packed with three times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, plus 100% of your daily value of four essential B vitamins and a dose of vitamin C goodness. Take a sachet first thing in the morning or pop it in your gym bag or suitcase for flavor-packed hydration on the fly, and treat your taste buds this summer with the super refreshing Orange Vanilla Dream flavor. Perfect for that nostalgic ice cream on the beach feel. It's non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free and soy-free, just clean, effective hydration that tastes great. Savor the last bits of summer with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with the code GRID at checkout. That's 20% off your first order with the code GRID at liquidiv.com.
I've talked about the lure of Ferrari being irresistible to Lewis Hamilton. Was it the same back then for you?
The key in my life is Cantirell. That's number one. Number two, I was the teammate of Jackie Stewart in Formula 2. So he was my mentor in a way, after he became the man to beat. At the Nürburgring in 67 with an F2, I was on front on the grid. So that day, my life had changed because people believed that I could do something. After having won long distance, 1,000 kilometers in the rain here a number of times, and they came to see me in 67 and offered me to drive the 68 season. Roy Salvadori has to be mentioned because I did with the Cooper Maserati in 67, Watkins Glen and Monza, for example. Because you can have some talent, but the timing counts also. The destiny, you can speak about it when it's behind you, but you know that your life is directed by circumstances. Jackie was Cantirell. He was in contact also with Ferrari. I didn't know it, he didn't mention it, and he learned later in August because the deal with Ferrari didn't work with Jackie. He learned that I was contact in Enna in Sicily. The sport director came, said, would you like? And of course, when you are 23, when you are 23, you don't speak to such an offer. I left Ferrari in 69 to drive Brabham and Ford. And then I returned afterwards. It's just to tell you, during that time, I've learned more. I improved my driving. And then I came back to Ferrari. And then we were another 4 years with Ferrari.
Well, I can't think of many drivers who have left Ferrari and been invited back.
He liked me very much. And he was patient because don't forget that I was sometimes working on different paths. Le Mans, for example. I start Le Mans once walking.
I know. And in 69.
I love to disobey, I must admit.
Can we talk through some of those decisions, all right? You win a race in 68 for Enzo Ferrari in Formula One. Why leave?
Because he wanted me exclusively in F1. And I wanted to do long distance and F1 at the same time because the calendar was giving you the chance to do so without any clash. And he could not offer me any sport car at the time.
So when you came back in 70, he offered you both?
Yes, because he could do both at the time for budget reasons and for many other reasons.
So he liked you. You won 6 Grand Prix together. How did he run this racing team? Did he run it with a rod of iron? Was he a scary boss?
No, not scary at all.
What annoyed him? Did anything annoy him?
For sure, things will have annoy him. When I was not coming sometimes to the practice, because you have to know that simulator didn't exist in those days. It was real tests in winter at Vallelunga. Sometimes I didn't show up. It didn't appreciate that, really.
Why wouldn't you show up?
Because I wasn't feeling well, or we live sometimes period where you have to face the disappearance of people you were sharing your life with in motor racing. Because you have to keep in mind that in those days, you could not crash. Because a crash, one time on two, it was the final one. And you never knew if you were going to be there on Monday.
How did you deal with that in your head?
Luckily, you're young and when you jump in the car, you have only one goal, is try to win. Because fear or negative thoughts about the subject, you're beaten from the start. So you have to have the privilege to have a limited instinct of conservation, let's say.
Well, and Jackie, you were very good in the wet and you were very good at the Nürburgring, which was one of the most dangerous racetracks in the world.
So maybe you...
I don't know what I'm implying.
Yeah, well, so maybe I have no instinct of conservation, but... being good on the wet, I'm convinced the 5 year I did motorcycle trial with the time of Sammy Miller, for example, who was a great champion in Britain and the one who really launched the discipline all over the world, and Gordon Jackson, the enduro and the speed. I did 4 or 5 seasons between the Lotus and the Mustang in saloon car racing help a lot because you need a lot of sensitivity.
Do you have incredibly good balance?
Probably, but the feeling clearly on wet. But maybe it's a legend, but I let the other convince that I was so good on the wet that they were already beaten at the start. Maybe. At Brands Hatch once, I overtook...
I know what you're going to say.
You know what I'm going to say?
You're going to say Niki Lauda around the outside.
I was very proud to say that I have beaten the multi-Formula One world champion Niki Lauda by the outside at Paddock Bend.
In the wet?
In the wet.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen the move. Have a look on YouTube.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's a lack of humility, but I must admit, still today, it's a great satisfaction.
Can we talk a little bit more about the Nürburgring? I mean, we're sat here at Spa. It's a legendary racetrack, but just across the border in Germany is the Nordschleife. Jackie Stewart used to call it the green hell.
It's a good definition, honestly, because there is no track as long as that one. And now I can say it. I did two times a race that you never heard, maybe, at the Nürburgring before.
Before Formula One.
Before Formula One and before Formula Two and before Formula Three. It's, you won't believe it, the 86 horse of the Nürburgring. I did that race once with a Cortina Lotus, one with a Mustang, with a rally driver as co-drive. Two drivers, non-stop. I was doing 14 hours during the day, and he was doing the rest during the night for 3 days. And at the end, if you have not learned the Nürburgring, you really have a problem.
14 miles, what is it, 160
kilometers? 23 kilometers.
Yeah.
23 yeah. something, under the 68 or 63 corner, and something which is not made for single-seater and cars, 17 jumps at the time. 17 times, either the front rear or the rear wheels were in the air, and sometimes really in the air. It makes things a little bit more simple, but yes, it's a track who suit me, definitely suit me well, because I won two German Grand Prix, who is reckoned as one of the most difficult track.
And did you get to a point with that place where you knew every corner?
Yes. Not closing my eyes, of course, huh? But yes, I know every single part of it, and I know how to take it. So when Ken take me to the Nürburgring, immediately I was fast. And yes, I was on the front row, but I didn't start from the first row because the Formula 2 were put behind, have to start behind the F1. So in the Grand Prix, I was four until I break a suspension one lap before the end. But that's the big change because, yes, I was doing endurance, successful. But that day, yes, I had a lot of requests to join different team. And, of course, Enzo was it. And I won. The cruelty is, yes, I won the French Grand Prix in my first season with them. But also, it was cruel because Joe Schlesser, or was his first attempt in Formula One, he was looking for it, die that weekend. And you have to remember, in those days, big crash, deadly crash or whatever, the race start and will finish without a safety car or without anything. Or raining, you start and you have finished. You have to. So the philosophy was totally different. But when you have to pass 50 laps next to someone who it's with a car who is still burning, and you know that it's the final one, it's really a mixed feeling. It's really a mixed feeling.
Did you have to take a chip out of your brain before getting in the car?
It's a pity that my parents are not here anymore, because they would have explained you how unsatisfied they were with my result at school, because I loved to be at the back of the class next to the radiator in the winter. I loved to look by the window and all this, and the exams at the end of the year was always poor, and we really had a hard time. That gave me the occasion to tell you, to become a race driver, the hardest part is to convince your parents that you want to do motor racing. 99 times on 100, the answer is you study first and we'll see afterward. But in my case, as they didn't know what they were going to do with me, it was for both sides, a very difficult situation. I'm not joking when I tell you I wanted to be a gardener or a gamekeeper. It's a reality. I never did what I want. I don't complain of the result at the end. And also, them at the time were very happy to see that in doing motorcycle, for example, unless then being last, I was in the early days in the middle of it. And then I discovered the pleasure to see the podium closer than I used to have it at school. The only problem, they were happy of my success, clearly, but they suffer all their life, every weekend, because in that time, it was really dangerous for a mother. So they paid my insuccess at school a very high price because I did racing for 30 years or 32 years. They always had a hard time. And that has to be seen also. And what is fantastic about the sport today, there is no comparison. It's so much safer. The car, the tracks, and in that sector, yes, Jackie Stewart, Ballast from the, they did a super job because today you can race, and frankly, there is no comparison about the risk.
100% agree with you on the safety advances that have been made in Formula One. But looking at your own career, are you looking back with hindsight through rose-tinted spectacles? Because I do want to put this to you. You walked across the start line at Le Mans in 69 in defiance of what was then meant to be a run and people not strapping themselves into their car properly. But you did also leave the GPDA at one point. Were you torn? I mean, were you in the Stirling Moss camp of danger being part of the allure for a driver? Or were you with Jackie Stewart on the need for more safety?
Honestly, not. I was totally concerned by the safety evolution, but I disagree on the process and the way it was done. Strike a day before the Grand Prix, no, I was not on that. But if you have something 6 months before and you have it, that's the goal. Then you have a good reason for it. But clearly, I can say in total honesty that yes, Jackie did. Not only Jackie at the time, also Jochen Rindt, for example. They were both linked to the idea we have to do huge progress in the future. But I didn't appreciate at the time. But the reality, you spoke about Le Mans, it's an inspiration. Today it's considered an inspiration because you start last and you finish first.
Great race.
It's almost a novel. It never happened normally like that. But the man who changed the Le Mans start is John Wolff driving a Porsche 917 who killed himself on lap one. That's the reality. The reality, because he has demonstrated that it was a stupidity to race a 300 kilometer down the straight, trying to put your seatbelt, which is almost impossible, at 200 miles per hour.
I think it was the combination of him dying on lap one and you being defiant at the start.
No, keep in mind, only John Wall dying, it was the inspiration, yes, but he changed the rule because it demonstrated that it was a total stupidity.
This episode is sponsored by Vanta. In today's fast-changing digital world, proving your company is trustworthy isn't just important for growth, it's essential. And Vanta is on hand to help. Vanta helps companies of all sizes show they take security and compliance seriously by helping them get compliant fast and stay that way, with industry-leading AI, automation, and continuous monitoring. Whether you're a startup working through your first SOC 2 or ISO 27001, or a bigger team managing vendor risk, Vanta makes the process quicker, simpler, and scalable. You can automate compliance across more than 35 frameworks, fly through security questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and what I really like is how it frees up valuable time by quietly running in the background so you can stay focused on growing your business. According to a recent IDC study, Vanta customers save over $500,000 a year in costs and are 3 times more productive. Establishing trust isn't optional. Vanta makes it automatic. Visit vanta.com/grid to sign up for a free demo today. That's vanta.com/grid. This episode is sponsored by Shopify. And if you've shopped online lately, chances are you've bought from a business powered by it. You know that purple Shop Pay button at checkout? The one that makes buying so incredibly easy? That's Shopify. And there's a reason so many businesses use it, because Shopify makes it so simple to start and run your business. Did you know that Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from major names like Mattel and Gymshark to small brands just getting started? And what's great is that it gives you all the tools you need from day one. You can build your storefront using their ready-to-go templates, and there's zero coding required. Plus, you can manage everything in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics, and its inbuilt marketing and email tools are designed to help you spread the word about your brand with ease. Oh, and that iconic purple Shop Pay button. It's not just popular, it's the best converting checkout on the planet. Your customers already love it. If you want to see less carts being abandoned, it's time for you to head over to Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/beyondthegrid. Go to shopify.com/beyondthegrid. Jackie, you mentioned a moment ago Jochen Rindt. Can we talk about 1970? Jochen tragically died at the Italian Grand Prix. You were the driver closest to him in the World Championship. You were the only guy who could beat him after his death. You won two of the last three races that year.
But mathematically, at the end, he had more points. And of course, without him, definitely, you don't know, but you gain a position. But he had 4 points more. The discussion was, do you give the title at titre posthume in French?
Posthumously.
I tell you, I answer no to your question. I am happy to not have won the championship that year.
Did you think that at the time?
Yes. I would have suffered all my life to have you today coming and saying, yes, you have won it because you were... No.
But Jackie, were you torn at the time about what to do in the car because you didn't want to beat him, yet you were a professional racing driver?
No, because the way I proceed in the championship, it was race by race, and I never thought about the title. The idea is to win every race if possible. No, for me, I think he deserved to have it. He has it. And he had mathematically more points. But I'm very happy not having been world champion.
You came runner-up in the championship twice.
Really? I did.
God. Does it frustrate you that you never won it?
I have no nostalgia of the past. Nothing. I have been granted to be with the right people most of my life. No nostalgia of my history in motor racing. I have the nostalgia of the humans who helped me to do what I have done. Those who are not with us anymore, or those I didn't have the chance to tell them how much I have appreciated the effort they have done for me to succeed. I love the idea to live the present and what is remaining of the future. Because first, it's a miracle to be alive. When I think about all I've done, stupid things, that's a real privilege. It's not a matter of talent. It's only a matter of luck. My vision on the world and the people changed completely, because instead of being focused totally on winning, it opened my vision on the world. The most important part of that life is that I have a vision on other people living other type of life. That gave me the opportunity to land on the ground and to be able to see the people who live on this planet in different countries and so on. And from that on, I think that probably the most important part of my life, I'm sorry to say that, it's not having done F1 or long distance or any one race. It changed my way of seeing life and the people. I came back on the planet. It's just a fantastic step. You become a better person, in my opinion. Because you,
do you, you think you were very selfish when you were racing?
But you have to be selfish to be in racing. It's an individual sport. Your main opponent, it's the other pilot in the team. Yes, you need qualities. You need qualities are not qualities in a society.
Yeah. You now have an incredible world view. I can see
that. It's narcissistic, it's selfish, it's individualism. You are at the limit of the morality. You need these qualities. You can be a nice person, but in the car, you're not definitely not the same person as you are outside. Hyde and Jekyll.
Yeah.
Yes, you're different in a car.
When you look back on 60-odd years in racing, right, observing racing, what do you think is the secret to success in this sport? What have you learned?
If you create a team, the most difficult part is the human aspect. It's to put experts in a group where the general objective prevails to your own selfishness and to create a team. We are creating a team today for Genesis to compete in the World Endurance Championship. The difficulty is to build a group of people who go for one goal or prevail on your own interests, where you are the best. So that's a big challenge. That's what Jean Todt said many times when he was at Ferrari. I spent 80% of my time to solve or to prevent human difficulties. And he did that very well.
Where does the driver fit in with all that?
But the driver is the drivers finish the job, because my philosophy is to say 90% of the job is done before the start. That's what I really think, by the engineer, by the all the people who are concerned. The people expect you to go on the podium, and as I said, the basic idea to be the winner. So you pick up, you steal the glory of everybody because you take the light. But also, when you miss the point and you are guilty of missing the point, you get also the 100% on the other side. But
you get both.
Yes, you get both. But there was a time where you knew everybody by his Christian name.
The teams are so big now, aren't they?
Yes.
More than 1,000 people.
Yes, because even in the industry at Porsche, when it was small, you knew everyone by their Christian name. You know who. Even if you go to Weissach in the development center, you have no idea how it was at the time. It was very, very human. Yes, the human. For me, the human aspect of things remained the main goal. For example, I go to Goodwood time to time. I was here, there, then the Duke of Richmond, for example. I have nothing against the idea to do business and to gain some money. He demonstrated, the Duke of Richmond, by treating his fans or motorsport fans, they are treated like guests. It's an attitude. And all the team in Goodwood treat the people with courtesy like guests. It demonstrates you can do some profit and being human at the same time.
Jackie, what a wonderful chat. Lovely to see you again. Final one from me. is a question that I'm asking everybody on the show this year.
Really? Which,
yes.
Well.
It's the 75th anniversary of Formula One. And it's quite a simple question. What is your favorite memory or moment in the entire history of this wonderful sport?
I will unsatisfy you, but it's a global philosophy that accepting the idea that it belongs to a group of people united by the same passion. They all did that job. And the 75th year, when you celebrate that, you honor the people who have done it, where you have to include also the volunteers, because in that passion, there are a lot of volunteers who made it possible. Without volunteers, it doesn't work.
The marshals, and yeah, very well said.
But it remains an extraordinary story. And of course, at the end, you can say long life to F1.
Hear, hear to what you've just said. I'm going to choose a moment in the career of Jackie X now. Pole position, Nürburgring, 1972. You were 12 seconds faster that year than pole position the previous year. That is my moment in your career. How did you do that? How did you go 12 seconds
because
quicker?
They had a good car.
And you knew it really
because,
well.
But even in with prototypes, and I was fast.
You were fast. Jackie, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks to you.
Jackie was the king of the Nürburgring, be in no doubt. What a wonderful chat with a motorsport legend. Jackie's now in his 80s, yet his love and passion for the sport remains as infectious as ever. I come away from every conversation with him gripped by nostalgia and astounded at how different F1 was back in his day. The sport was brutal in the 60s and 70s. So many drivers lost their lives, and to hear Jackie acknowledge the emotional turmoil he caused his parents during his 30-year driving career was very moving to hear. Jackie, many thanks for your time. It was lovely to speak, and I hope to see you at a race again soon. Well, that's almost it for this week. And like Formula One, Beyond the Grid is taking a short summer break. We'll be back on Wednesday, the 27th of August, the week leading up to the Dutch Grand Prix, with another great guest from the world of Formula One. And to whet your appetites in the meantime, why not scroll back through the feed to hear this year's chats with the likes of Lando Norris, Alex Albon, Isaac Hadjar, Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly. I've also spoken to some of the sport's legends like world champions Emerson Fittipaldi and Mario Andretti. And we've even had Hollywood royalty on the show in the shape of F1 movie star Brad Pitt. You can also watch those conversations on the official F1 YouTube channel. Do also check out F1's other official podcasts. F1 Nation's review of the Hungarian Grand Prix is out now. And F1 Explains is the place to go to hear experts answer your questions about the sport. Just search for F1 Nation and F1 Explains on your podcast app. Thanks so much for listening in the first half of the season. Enjoy the break, and we'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.